But the FDA said that
Blog Talk Radio.
The Department of Defense says it's evacuated approximately 42,000 people from Afghanistan since the end of July to temporary safe havens.
U.S. installations in Qatar, UAE, Kuwait, Bahrain, Italy, Spain, and Germany.
Speaking with reporters, Army General Hank Taylor additionally noted refugees were also flown to the U.S.
Five flights landed at Dulles International Airport with approximately 1,300 passengers.
He said four U.S. military bases will continue to receive Afghans.
Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, Fort Lee, Virginia, Joint Base McGuire-Dix, Lakehurst, New Jersey, and Fort Bliss, Texas.
Members of the House Intelligence Committee will receive a classified briefing today on the situation in Afghanistan. That comes as all members of the House will receive a classified briefing tomorrow morning. New York City is putting in a coronavirus vaccine mandate for teachers and school staff. School's Chancellor, Misha Porter, says this will apply to all 148,000 Department of Education employees, from teachers to cafeteria workers to contractors in school settings.
Our schools must be safe spaces for all children. And by mandating a first dose by September 27th, the first month of school, we are adding yet another layer of protection for our kids.
Employees must get their first dose by September 27th. There's no coronavirus testing option. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
This Labor Day, put an end to junk sleep. Right now at Mattress Firm, save up to $500 on our top-rated brands when you get a king bed for the price of a queen or a queen for a twin. Plus, get a free adjustable base when you spend $6.99 on Sealy. Or save up to 50% on hot buys from top brands like Sleepy's or Serta. With our highly trained sleep experts and our low price guarantee, you can rest assured you'll get the best bed at the best price. Unjunk your sleep, only at Mattress Firm. Offer valid with qualifying purchase. Restrictions apply. Valid at participating locations only. For offer details, visit mattressfirm.com/sale.
Research shows people remember radio ads that remind them of the past. So to help you remember that Liberty Mutual Insurance Company customizes your home insurance so you only pay for what you need, here's an ad that'll really take you back.
Back in my day, I heard a voice from the radio say, Liberty Mutual customizes my home insurance so I only pay for what I need. I'm getting on in years now, but heavens to Betsy, there are some things an old fella like me just never forgets.
Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Monday. Mostly sunny skies, cooler temperatures though. High temperatures around 69, 70 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear skies, low temperatures dropping down to a crisp 53. For Tuesday and for Wednesday, a hair warmer. High temperatures in the low 70s, mostly sunny skies, partly cloudy skies through the overnight. Low temperatures in the mid-50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned, because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next to you.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to our good news segment. Are you ready to dance in the street a little bit? Do you think maybe you're looking at your life and you're not quite sure what's going on? Have you read about what could happen when you take the world of possibility, sci-fi, put them together with some of the best soundtracks on the planet, starting out with one of my favorite, Love Child? When you think about all of these ideas that go on in one's mind and you attempt to figure out, how do I create some of the most incredibly interesting, nail-biting, edge-of-your-seat storytelling to talk about what? To talk about how we look at the world from the eyes of Dr. Shuey. And this is what I love about this. Dr. Kevin Shuey is joining me here today because he's come back at it. And what I mean about that, bad love medicine, this is something that's going to take you from, let's just call it deep, deep space, And if you're like me, anything that even says the word space in it, you're like, I'm all in. Dr. Shuey, it's great to have you back.
Oh, I'm so glad to be back with you, Pat. It's Bad Love Medicine is my fourth novel in the Bad Love series, and it's a knockout. I mean, it just there's a little bit of everything in this book for the readers out there.
And let's just stop for a minute and talk about the soundtrack, because and I say soundtrack because there is a soundtrack that goes with this. And many people, you know, have heard me talk about the fact that there's a song for everything. And I want to ask you, it sounds like that's in your heart as well, that there's a song for everything, that sometimes through music, and especially some of these songs, boy, you know, you really can capture the essence of what's going on in people's hearts. How do you feel about that?
Oh, gosh, you know, I couldn't, you know, we're two peas in a pod here because I grew up in St. Louis County. And my dad was a jukebox vendor in the early 60s. And mm-hmm. so we had a Wurlitzer-style jukebox in our basement that played 45 RPM records. And I'm the youngest of three children. I have two older sisters who both were, you know, pretty and popular and loved to dance. And so I would be sitting in the corner of the basement watching my sisters dance with all their friends and have these parties, dancing to all the number one, you know, or top 10 45 RPM records through the 60s and early 70s. And I have to tell you that there is a song for everything. I wholly agree with you. And not only that, you know what, Pat? Music always makes everything better. It has a way of lifting the circumstances, you know, so that you can see them better and find some enjoyment. And so, you know, all four of my books have soundtracks, but I'm very fond of the soundtrack in Bad Love Medicine. It has some really fun hidden gems of music from the 60s and 70s.
Well, I got to tell you, as I'm reading, and I've gotten familiar with the soundtrack, and I come from a place, my mom owned they used to say a soda shop, and this was in the Bronx. And the jukebox was playing all the time, you know, and this took me down memory lane. You know, one of the things that I really was fascinated by in this book in particular, and I'm so appreciative that you've included it, is a conversation about Nazi Germany. Now, you may be thinking, really? She's excited about that? Well, the reason I'm excited about that, and especially talking about Hitler and Hitler's darkest secrets and the way you do, is because we've got a little forgetter going on about what that era was like, about what that energy was like. And we see the recurrence of Hitler-type people in blockbuster movies, too. I want to just talk with you about this because it's just so fascinating to me that we can step back in time and step forward in time all in the same, how should I call it, dream state. And when you write a book like this, it's a beautiful journey to take in a dream state. Tell me about the importance of bringing history of old, where we are today, and a future that is so beautifully laid out here.
All right, so this is a really open-ended question, and I hope I hit the heart of it. But I learned, so you know that I'm a cancer specialist, and the doctor that I trained under was a guy named Jim Cox. I mean, he was really world famous. He was, at the end of his career, director of radiation at MD Anderson Hospital in Houston, Texas. And Jim taught us, when I was in training, that we all learn far more from our mistakes than we do from our successes,
yeah.
That all success does is cultivate pride, and pride is no great virtue to cultivate anyway. And so there are mistakes. There are grand mistakes in history. And Hitler and his Socialist Party in Germany are right at the top of the list. And, you know, he looked shiny and new when he became chancellor in 1933 yeah. in Germany. And he really had the support of the general population. But what is shiny and new turned out to be rusty and bad by the time the early 40s were started. And Hitler was using the German army to try to take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he had, you know, he had world domination in his eyes. And actually in this book, Bad Love Medicine, you're going to learn about how the Germans used drugs for their army. They basically were using crystal, it was called Pervitin. And they were using Pervitin, which is really just a pure form of crystal methamphetamine. And that's how they kept marching on France. They didn't stop. And I mean, it was, you know, France wasn't prepared for what happened
yeah.
when Germany took over. And so, but Hitler himself had a personal doctor who was injecting him on a regular basis. And by the time we were getting to the end of World War II, he was making terrible decisions because his ego was inflated and distorted because of because he was taking drugs. He's a drug addict.
Yeah.
And very few people, I think, really know that. I mean, he was a vegetarian. I mean, who knew that? And so, but anyway, you learn a lot about history and the history of the Nazi Party in this book. In the very first chapter, I talk about the Hitler Youth Movement. I mean,
yes.
you know, basically his party took the children out of the homes and taught them their ways to the extent that some of the children turned on their own families and their extended families when they stepped out of the Nazi way of doing things. And, you know, so basically it was a country that was being run on fear. And we can never allow ourselves in America to be governed by fear. That's probably one of the best take-home messages I can give you.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, this is really, for me, as I'm reading the book, I'm really thinking about the stories of this and how parallels are. And first of all, let's talk about the characters before we just, you know, get lost in all of my questions. But the characters and the personality of the characters are interesting. And you say they're real people, real-life people. And I love that we're looking at characterizations of humanity in such a far-out, fun, entrancing book. And when I think about this and I think about, you know, some of the things you write and the way you write it, I'm really struck by many of the characters. I know that, you know, some of them have come back and some of them are new in the book. But I wanted to ask you this question. How do the characters that come back evolve in this book? And I'm particularly, you know, I have my own favorites, I must say. I have my own favorites, right? And, you know, of course, Bubble Butt is right there at the top of it. But I also have a couple that I just always want to know more about. And, you know, when I think about them and I think about the new characters that were brought in here and brought to the conversation, you know, I'm just struck by them, especially the main characters from the Planet Azure. When you start to talk about Blue Nova One, the Prime Princess to Queen Azure, when you start to see these characters and them, you know, up against a backdrop of what you start the book with, it really takes you to a fascinating place that's almost surreal. And I wanted to ask you this. How have some of these characters evolved in this book? And without giving everybody the whole what the book is about. I hate when we do that, right? I want to know how the kind of characters evolved, and, you know, how did they become mentors of others?
Well, I think, you know, looking at this particular book, Bad Love Medicine, one of the characters you really see the evolution of her is Blue Nova One.
Yep.
And so they meet Blue Nova One and Bad Love Tigers in the forest of southern China. And then in the next book, Bad Love Beyond, they find a way to travel to planet Azor to get the cure, the genetic medicine cure for inherited breast cancer. And to do so, they save the Republic of Azor from a volcanic extinction event. And so you're getting to know Blue Nova One from Bad Love Tigers through Bad Love Beyond and then into Bad Love Medicine. And she really evolves because the Azorians, you know, they try to govern and progress in their evolution without war. I mean, they are not a warmongering culture. They believe in progression, and they believe in, you know, moving forward evolutionary in an evolutionary way, but they don't believe in war. And so here's Blue Nova One, and she becomes friends and really just endears herself to the Bad Love Gang, which, as you know, is kind of a microcosm of all the personalities that you can imagine from the planet Earth. And so she really cares about them, and they're not a particularly emotional people either, but they're getting more in touch with their emotions because of their interactions with the Bad Love Gang. So you have this intellectual culture that's starting to get more and more in touch with their emotions because of the Bad Love Gang. And in Bad Love Medicine, basically, you know, without really giving too much of the book away, the Bad Love Gang themselves are faced with an extinction event. And Blue Nova One is called on to help. And the way in which she helps shows a fundamental or basic change in her behavior because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so without giving any more of a glimpse at what really happens, I think that's
perfect.
Just using her as someone who really evolves a lot in personality, it's probably one of the underlying big stories.
Yeah, that's the way I felt about it when I read the book. I mean, you know, I'm also struck by a couple of things, Dr. Shuey, about you, and I was last time. You know, this is a book, and as we were talking about it, for those of you out there, Bad Love, there's a Bad Love series. Let's tell folks, first of all, how they can find out about the book, but also how they can find out more about you. That's super important.
I'd love for them to follow me on Instagram. So it's at Real Kevin Shuey, and it's spelled KevinSchewe. And if they want to get to know me, Pat, my Instagram account is just a hoot. I've only been on there 2 years. My publisher made me do it. And as far as learning about the books, I have a wonderful author's website. It's kevinshuey.com. And you can go to the Buy tab, for example, and get the books on Barnes & Noble or Amazon. They're on Kindle, paperback, hardcover. The first three books are on Amazon Audible. And Bad Love Medicine is out on Kindle, paperback, hardcover, but it'll be out on Audible within the next month or two as well. And, you know, it's the book series, I'm hoping to write 12 books, so we're 4 books into it right now.
Yep.
And so there's much more to come. I can tell you that I've been writing the books. Basically, it's taking me 4 to 5 months. I've, I've got 4 books out in 22 months, Pat.
I know. I know. But there's a passion and purpose behind them. And I know our time is short, but I must ask you this question. You know, I've interviewed a lot of people, Dr. Kevin, and one of the things I've always longed for, you know, and I thought about was how do we represent and talk about something like cancer? And I just want to mention to people here, beyond being an author, you are an entrepreneur, you have other businesses, and we'll talk about them in a minute. But every year you write a skit for cancer survivors. So what I'm talking about here is you're incorporating your real life, you know, things you see every day. As a radiation oncologist, everything you see every day, and you see people every day and what their experience is like, and that shows up in the books. I don't think that you could write a book like this or the books you've written without your real life everyday experience. And so that to me really touches the hearts of people about topics and subjects that are really difficult to talk about or even look at. And, you know, congratulations for you to do that, to really step forward and do that. This is a book for people. You know, a lot of teens may read it that all of us could learn from. I want to ask you, out of this particular book, and I can't wait for the rest, what is the vision you want to leave us with? What do you want us to hold when we read this book?
That despite whatever circumstances we're living in or living through, that there is hope for the future. And there is hope for a good and better future. And, you know, every one of these books stands alone by itself. You can pick up any of the Bad Love books, mm-hmm. Bad Love Strikes, Bad Love Tigers, Bad Love Beyond, and the new one we're talking about, Bad Love Medicine. Okay. You literally can start with any of them. And these books project hope. And that's what I do as a cancer doctor, because you can never lose hope. And it's the flame that keeps life going.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be the message I would want people to have. And, you know, it's true, these books are from, we say the books are from ages 10 to 100. This book series is from age 10 to 100. And you just, you know, when you're young, I don't know that you really realize how important history is. The older I've got, Pat, the more I realize how important history is.
Yeah, me too.
And you're very perceptive, because I have learned so much from my patients. And I actually talk about that in the acknowledgement section in the front of my books. So I would encourage the audience to take a look at that. Because it's so true.
And, you know, the story itself is very touching. Without giving everything away to folks, you all can read about this online, but the story is very touching. You know, the story really is about, it's in search of a cure. And, you know, it's in search of saving someone. And when you really get tapped into that heart energy of that, and, you know, you take us back to history and have us look through the time tunnel of this and how to find solutions in this, it really brings a real live earth crisis situation that we have with cancer, right, breast cancer and other forms, but it brings it to light in a whole different way as we watch the challenges, the obstacles, and the struggles and survival, you know, in search for this one cure for this person, this character. And isn't that so much like the journey in life for people with cancer?
Let me take off on that just
Please.
For a sec. So in the book, Bad Love Strikes, at the initiation of this whole series, you know, the Bad Love Gang have discovered the White Hole Project, which is a time travel machine, and they're sitting around and they're deciding how they're going to use it, and basically they decide to go back
to the Holocaust and try to rescue somebody. And in their philosophy of using it for this purpose, they're convinced that if they just save the life of one Holocaust victim, that it would be totally worth it to go back and do this and take on this mission. And then as this series progresses, you find out that one of the people that they rescue faces a future fate of breast cancer. And so by the time you're in book four, the gang is, their mission is to save the life of this one person. And in my background as a cancer specialist, Pat, if you're the patient sitting in that chair across from me, you're one person. And it doesn't matter what's going on in the rest of the world. What matters is that you, that one person, you want to be saved from your cancer. You want to be cured, and you want to live as long as you can and as good as you can with this diagnosis. And so the series really speaks to the importance of the individual. Mm. And so I love how perceptive you've been in your reading of these books so far.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'll just leave it at this note, if you don't mind, Dr. Kevin. I think for me, when you touch upon something like that, and you can enter a world that brings both, you know, the future and the present and the past into one state of being, into one level of consciousness, as you've done in the book, you know, there is something about this that teaches all of us that there is something beyond the beyond, and that's called hope. And hope with action is just unparalleled in its energy and life force. And I want to thank you for bringing series like this together, which really takes us to a place where we can make relatable perceptions of what you've done, have some fun in doing it, and really cheer on, you know, the heroines. And thank you for bringing that energy to life, Dr. Kevin. How do we find out again? And then what's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with today?
Well, as far as finding out, it's go to the website, kevinschewe.com. It's KevinSchewe, and .com. And then my Instagram account is @realkevinschewe. And that's how to find me and follow me, and it's you'll have a lot of fun with that. And as far as the message, you know, I have a quote from Winston Churchill, and I have a lot of quotes from Winston Churchill in this book because the group meet with him, you know, and so the message is never give up and never give up hope, because hope springs eternal, and so that's what the message is. The message is hope, and I think that these books really well, we're coming out of this crazy pandemic time, and it's really gotten people's energies refocused. And I think this is a great way to come out of the pandemic, is to read Bad Love Medicine, and it'll give you hope for the future.
Wow. Thank you so much, everybody. Please check it out. I want to make sure Bad Love Medicine, we're excited to have another great book from Dr. Schewe, and a fantastic soundtrack. Dr. Schewe, thank you so much for today.
Thank you, Pat. Really enjoyed it.
All right, everybody. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you
Ready to branch out? Take a leap of faith. Tune in to Get Rooted Radio with Erica Gifford Mills on TransformationTalkRadio.com to equip, empower, and enlighten yourself. Erica will energize and excite you to power up your passionate dream that sets your soul on fire. So, get fearlessly ready and get powerfully rooted in your yes to live it up, love it up, and let it go. Visit GetRootedRadio.com.
Even though your home base is one Enneagram type, you have characteristics of all the types. Tune in to Enneagram Conversations with Renee Siegel the second and fourth Monday of each month at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn how you can unlock your unlimited potential. Visit YouArePurePotential.com for more about Renee and her work. That's the letter U, the letter R, PurePotential.com.
Welcome to The Pause with Ellen Wyoming Delgoy. Life can be demanding, and most of us get caught up in the busy go, go, go. But there is great value in taking a moment to pause and reflect. Constant momentum does not always equate to forward momentum. And I'm here to teach you how to take a strategic pause so that your next step is purposeful and in the direction of your goals. Develop self-awareness and skills that improve your ability to walk through life with intention. This is the path toward a more balanced, fulfilling state of being. Take a beat and then take action. The Pause with me, Ellen Wyoming Deloy, starts right now. Hi, good morning. Welcome. I almost said welcome to Wednesday, but it's Tuesday. I'm your host, Ellen Wyoming Deloy. You're listening to The Pause. You'll catch me every second and fourth Tuesday on the Transformation Talk Radio, Transformation Network. And today we're talking about why does that keep happening? And it's come up a little bit. So here's the scenario to set the stage for what this is about. Have you ever found yourself in a job or a relationship or anything where basically you're having to relate to something besides just yourself, but maybe it's even just yourself, and the same thing keeps happening again and again and again, time and time again, even if you don't like it, or especially if you don't like it, and even if it's a new situation or place or person or job, like the same scenario is repeating itself. This is sometimes why someone will come to me as a coach, and I have actually a current situation of this with a client, and they came and they said, you know, we're great, doing fine, but what I'm noticing is especially in my relationship, and then of course it does go into all areas of their life. She was talking about how he's starting to see that he's the common denominator in a sequence of things that's been happening in his life, where early on, and I think this is the case for a lot of people, like early on you might really think it is the other person, like, oh my God, they're just, so whatever, or this job is so, or the workplace culture is so this, and so obviously it's not right, I shouldn't be here. And sometimes that is the solution, right? Like, okay, this is a thing to end, and like, let's stop it and go somewhere else. But if you get into a point in your life, like my client did, where they show up and they go, I can see that I'm the common denominator now in this certain particular way that I keep having struggles in my relationships, and I really like this person. And here's the thing, guys, I'm not a relationship coach, okay? And so it was really interesting, but I think that the reason they came to me is because of this holistic perspective I take on life, and that I'm really interested in the energy underneath things. And if you're interested in the energy underneath your patterns and stories, you can apply it to any part of your life, relationship, job, career, relationship with money, family, housing, place you live, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can really have a lot of control over what you then create, but you have to get comfortable with getting into the sort of nitty-gritty of it, which can be ugly and uncomfortable and squishy, which is why it's good to find someone to work with you with it. And so anyway, he came and he said, you know, I'm the way that I react and respond, I used to think it was my partner's problem, and we had a really great relationship. This is his previous partner, but this, that, and the other thing happened, and we split up, and sure, fine. And he could find lots of reasons that it was good to end. He was living in Europe at the time. He transferred to a position in the United States, and they were long distance, and it was difficult. they wanted to move on. They were in there at that time, you know, early mid-30s, and, like, that was fine. So they split and went their separate ways. But he's, you know, new relationship, new situation, and same little things in the relationship he's noticing. He goes, ah, you know, and what an insightful human to sit there and go, ah, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm doing something that is continuing to create this thing that I'm experiencing that is unpleasant and I don't enjoy. I wonder what I can do about it. So, like, already gold star for this client. They realized that they needed help to figure out what the thing was that they needed to unpack. And sometimes you just need someone to help you go on that journey to, like, pick up the rock and look under it with you. Because how do you know how to find the rock to look under? Like, that's one of the things sometimes. Sometimes we're blind to our own sort of, like, current context and situation. And then also, like, then can you stomach looking at what's under the rock? I was having a talk once with somebody else about just, like, a meditative practice and the way that I do insight and intuition. And they were like, I really want to have that kind of practice, but I'm too afraid of what I would find. I can't do it. And so they actively avoid getting to know themselves more because they're afraid of what they'll look at. And here's the thing, like, we already all know in our own selves and our heart of hearts what's there. So saying hello to it can be the most beautiful blessing to letting go of what we don't need to hold on to anymore and to, like, hold whatever that tension or pain was for the moment. And I know this can be really various to different people's experiences, and I am not a licensed clinical psychologist. I am not going to advocate doing something just like this if you are experiencing, for example, deep clinical depression or PTSD, because often there's a lot of other elements involved around the workings of the inner workings of the brain with, like, neurotransmitters that could use a little bit of support in conjunction to getting to the root of the energy of the story. I do think that the energy of the story is a strong pathway to healing and a fast pathway, not like fast, like quick and fast and easy, right? But like a very strong way to do self-reflection and self-healing work. But I don't want to advocate it for somebody who hasn't done enough of, isn't in a place where they can start stepping in. So I want to be really clear about that. This is coaching, and this is you knowing that you're in a place that you're ready to be coached and go into. Okay. This is not like skipping the medication that's supporting you with a panic attack and anxiety, right? It's not the same. But it can help. I think it's very complementary, but do your work first for where you need to be. So I'm just saying that because I'm realizing, like, this is not a total just cure all, even though I 100% believe in it for so much. So I think the first thing is, for why am I experiencing X, Y, or Z over and over and over again, is we have to get comfortable looking at the terrain that we're in and identifying us as the agent and the actor that is actively creating the conditions around us, right? We may be in a global pandemic, right? We may be in an awkward hybrid work situation. We may be in a lot of things that feel outside of our control, but we do not give ourselves enough credit for the control that we have in our active space and then our ability to control the outcome if we decide to shift something within our own energy and perspective that will have impact on our external conditions. So I'll say that again. We're not aware of how much control we have over the course of our lives. Because it can feel like this global pandemic was put on us, and it was in many ways, but how much control we still have to maneuver through it in a way that facilitates highest and best outcomes for our external conditions so that we can move forward in a way that works. And it starts with surveying the terrain around you. So what do I mean about that? Now, if you're in a situation, you're going to know what it is. But if you look around and go, why do I keep getting into this? What is this and how is this going to stop showing up for me? So I had an example earlier this morning. I'm actually in the middle of doing I'm on day seven. I'm leading a 21-day reset and reflection challenge for people. So if you're interested in that, you can actually still sign up to participate in it. But you have to go to my website, ellenwyomingdevoy.com, and subscribe to the newsletter, and I can hook you up that way. And but with the challenge, we're going through the seven energy centers, the chakras, and we're using those as a framework for how to do our reset and reflection. And I'm talking about the key characteristics of each chakra from our first through our seventh, and I'm focusing on each chakra for 3 days until so that there's like reflective practice in there, there's education about what that energy center is about. And you don't have to necessarily believe in chakras and energy centers, but the frameworks that each of them represent for how they impact the archetype of our lives is really helpful. And so one of the patterns I actually called up for myself while I was going through it for one of the videos was, I continue to find myself with particular people getting very anxious about how I've communicated. And it's really funny because my entire life is about key communication. And I'm getting distracted because I'm supposed to tell my producer if I want a break, and so that's where my brain is suddenly going. So I'm getting lost in my train of thought. Yes, I'll take a break, so I'm going to cue this up really quickly, and then we'll take a break. But what I want to do is always communicate really well and clearly, which is funny that that just happened, isn't it? And so much of my work is about creating these big facilitated safe spaces for how we navigate saying what needs to be said in a way that it can be heard and we can be present to hear what needs to be spoken, right? That's my facilitation work. And it's so much my one-to-one work as well. It's creating that safe environment for the person who is receiving space to communicate what they're working through, how to survey their own terrain. And so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to walk you through how to start to look around for the patterns that are underlying some of your challenges and how to start to say hello to them in a way. And I'll use my example around getting caught up in a communication loop to help you get there.
The Dr. Pat Show.
This is it. The energy of heart to heart, mind to mind, love to love. These are the questions that people have and rarely state. When we have an internal transformation and we see things differently, what does it mean to step into the full nature of being a spiritual being? How am I to be? This is it. Every day, you have to do something outrageously positive. It is so absolutely relevant because what I've seen in humanity, despite what's in the headlines, I'm so struck by the heroes that have come forward. I'm just absolutely in awe of the idea generators and superheroes. All of you, you are the best listening audience in the world, and we are bringing it in 2021. Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy Al, on the Tracy Al Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyAlClark.com.
Welcome back, everybody. I was doing a little dance for the intro or the promo music. If you're just joining in, I'm Ellen. You're listening to The Pause with Ellen Wyoming Deloy, where we take a beat and then we take action. I'm live second and fourth Tuesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. And today we're talking about why does this keep happening? And it's about unpacking the pattern in our life that's creating an unfavorable situation from happening over and over and over again. So I was diving in to start talking about how we can survey the terrain of our current life situation to try to find where the source of the, you know, the not so desirable thing is happening. Say you're in a job where you're underappreciated and you've been in, you left your last company because you were in a position where you were underappreciated and undervalued despite what you brought to the table. And when you left, you got this new position. It sounded great, looked very shiny, had a pay increase, and lo and behold, the same thing is happening again, right? So it's that kind of thing. When you start to realize that you might be central to something that's going on around you and you're not sure what it is that you're doing that keeps creating the same thing that you're just not into anymore. And I was starting to use this example about my ability, like there's certain types of people that I'll communicate with, but then I then get very anxious about like what I've said or how it's landed or if it was heard right and how to unpack that. And I just recently was able to unpack that because of a course I'm in the middle of teaching. And I thought it would be a good example for today's show. So for me, there's it's different kinds of people in my life that I will occasionally interact with where I suddenly am extremely self-conscious about what I just said, how I just said it, and, you know, did they know that I had that context in mind and I already understood this, and are they overanalyzing me the way I'm overanalyzing this right now? And I'm getting myself into a bit of a worried spin cycle of, like, honestly, do they like me? Do they approve of me? Am I okay? Right. And so that's not like a job I've landed in that I'm uncomfortable with, but that's like a situation that's a pattern in my life that I butt up against every now and then. So we can use it for the same thing. And so over the weekend, I found myself spinning in this a little bit and I was like, okay, this is just an energy that I'm creating. I owned it first. I'm the agent of creating that energy. And because I'm holding on to it, I'm also pulling in energy that supports it, right? It's kind of like when you see a car with a dent and it bothers you, all you see after that is cars with dents or dents on your own car, and it just bothers you. But like a week ago, you never even thought about it, right? That's what I mean, like the attention calling quality to all the other bad things around it that could possibly exist. And so I didn't want to go down that path because my job is so much about clear communication, creating good spaces for communication, getting in touch with our own inner communication so we can move past blocks of like, if I don't practice what I preach, we're never going to get anywhere. And so I stopped in that moment and I said to myself, okay, I'm spinning in this thing of a pattern that I don't like because it does happen once in a while with a certain kind of energy in a person when I meet them. And I'm feeling unseen and unheard clearly and then anxious about what I said because I don't think I was seen the right way or something, right? It's very insecure. And I sat there and I was like, okay, where is this coming from? And I'm starting to punish myself for not being perfect in how I communicated. And I was like, where is this punishment coming from? Why have I learned to punish myself for not being perfect in my communication? Right. And believe me, I've asked this question a number of times in a lot of different arenas of my life, and I'm slowly sort of peeling the onion layers of faulty programming off of my system so I can show up more in honoring myself and in my truth and in my voice. And it's why I'm able to do what I do now, and it's why I'm able to help people now in the way that I do. But I'm also still actively working on it myself. I just think it's important to keep doing that, and I have coaches too who support me to kind of continue to refine and practice how I get into myself. And I love that. I love the reciprocity of it when it happens and I find a good person to work with, just like I hope people appreciate me when I get to work with them. And so what I did was over the weekend, I kind of was like, all right, the terrain of this is actually not about the interaction with me and this person, which would be easy to get locked into, right? Because that's the obvious external condition. It's the trigger that created the situation for that moment. I could put all my blame on me for having been unclear. And here's the thing, that person never did or said anything. Like I was just imagining stuff all of a sudden that was maybe completely not real. And I had to go back and was like, okay, I'm punishing myself and I'm feeling guilty and I'm feeling shame. Interesting. And that's the pause. That's starting to find the space so that you can see what you're experiencing so that you can go and understand the layer underneath it as opposed to getting stuck in the story of what happened at on the phone call that day or whatever it was, right? And so I was like looking for punishment and shame around how I communicate. And there could be a lot of examples for like where I may have experienced this, but for me, I know that there is stuff that comes kind of deeper rooted into like early life stuff, like expression of self. And then I was like, we don't have to get super into it, but like there are certain words that I started to associate with me having an opinion, me exerting my voice, me being in charge of myself that really did not jive well with some people in my early life that started to frame a pattern for me, okay? And so when I followed the punishment and the shame for expressing myself and kind of having my own exuberant bubbly thought because I hadn't been happy in the moment about the thing I was talking about, I was like, oh, okay, I'm punishing myself because someone punished me a long time ago for expressing myself in a way that was just innocent and cavalier and candid and actually not harmful to anyone, but it harmed the other person because they didn't give themselves permission to do what I was doing. And so they weren't mad at what I said. They were mad at my ability to express myself freely in my early life. And that's where the punishment came from. And at that point, I was very, you know, we're very influenceable when we're young. We're programmable when we're young, and those are the patterns that we adopt for our long-term lives. But when I can go back and say hello to the origin story of the moment, I can go and look at the energy underneath it, and I could sort of see, and what I'm imagining now is like one of those big medieval castle gates when the locks turn and all of those iron workings kind of come in together and clink. I can see the moment where the clink happened, and like, I've been working to break open those chains for a long time in my own patterning. And you'll do this over and over again if you get into this practice of like following where the feeling is coming from rather than getting lost in the story. And that's how you survey your terrain. That's how you actually start to pick up what's underneath the rock. It's not about the rock. It's about what's underneath the rock, right? And so for me, it was going back to that moment and reconnecting with that young person in myself. This requires the ability to do some visualization and accepting that you can heal yourself and how the power of words and affirmations really do help. And for me, to get over feeling sticky and messy over the weekend over this conversation that was probably inconclusive for the other person. It was just all in my head and I was stuck in it. It was just going, you're okay. You're allowed to have an opinion. You're allowed to be exuberant in how you talk about things. You're allowed to be yourself. It's okay to be enthusiastic about what you're passionate about, right? And I'm not responsible for how the other person handles that. I'm not attacking anyone. I'm not accusing anyone of anything. I wasn't even in judgment for anything, right? And it's like that release of knowing I have permission to be myself is so helpful. And it helped me get to the origin of the story rather than getting stuck in the thing that happened. That allowed me to finally shift my energy to something else and go, you know, maybe I helped de-layer a little bit further right then so that I don't end up spinning in that kind of situation again. And so that was a very acute scenario for like a one-to-one reaction, and then really was about a pattern within myself that I was recognizing. And for you, it might be different. It might be a work situation, and you might realize maybe that there is judgment involved, and you're starting to judge the situation outside of you and the people around you, and everyone else is the bad guy, and you're the person. But then I would look at, in that scenario, where is the rock where the judgment is hiding under more deeply? And I would start to pull that up, and I would go follow it, right? Because our external conditions, some of you may have heard this before, are really a reflection of our inner lives and what we've created in our manifestations, right? So this, my belief really is that I'm just living out the current moment of whatever I have intentionally chosen in my million and one intentional choices and my billion and one unintentional choices in the present moment. I'm just living out all of my decisions. And sometimes my decisions are my reactions to things that happen to me, right? The pandemic totally happened to me, but I chose to respond in these ways so that things could keep working, as opposed to these ways to where I might have been stuck still in energy from 2019 that wasn't helping me anymore, right? And I just am so fervent in that belief about how we create what's in front of us. And so if you're willing to at least play with that and then go look at the rock and go, I'm judging everyone really hard and they're all stupid and my workplace is dumb and this culture sucks. Being willing to step into finding some of those origin stories for where those judgment patterns were created can be super helpful, also super hard. And I'm not saying to blame yourself or judge yourself, but to get the space and go, where was I programmed to learn to judge in the way that I do? And if I flip the mirror, how do I judge myself? And then to avoid judging myself and feeling punished for how I was judged and taught to judge, I in turn now judge others, right? And that can be the beginning of uncovering the origin of the pattern for why am I here right now and why is it like this? And what you really want to do before you quit your job, blow up your marriage, break up with your partner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What you really, really want to do is you want to do this self-work first, because if you don't unplug from it at its energetic source, it will find a way to show up for you again at some point down the road. It'll be a story you keep having to live until you clear the unresolved energy of it, right? Because all of those energies are pulling us out of our true self, our honoring of ourselves, I want us to be honoring ourselves and being in our truth. And that can take a while because there's a lot of layers of stuff that gets on top of it. And it shows up through the discomfort of what we experience in our day to day. And every opportunity is an opportunity to say, hello, what's not working, pick up the rock, look underneath it and say hello. All right, so we're coming in at the end of our show today. We've got just a minute left. If you're interested in this, you want to jump in on the 21-day reset challenge, which is a 21-day thing of reflective process and insight through the chakras, go to my website, ellenwyomingdeloy.com. Click the Book Now button, and what it'll do, it'll take you to a menu of options, and you can sign up. It's $40. But you can sign up for the course, and I'll start sending you the videos. There are 21 videos. There's one for each day, and you just get to dive in and do the work. So I really encourage you to do that and sign up for my newsletter, too, while you're there. You can scroll to the bottom of the website, and you'll sign up for the newsletter. Okay. Thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in to The Pause with me, Ellen Wyoming Deloy. I'll be back again on the second Tuesday in August, 9 a.m. Pacific. Thanks for being here on The Pause. Whenever you are listening and wherever you're listening from, we hope this time gives you some space from your day to reflect and gain some insight into where you're going and how you can make your next steps count. If you're really looking to jump into your personal growth journey, schedule a free consultation with me and learn how my coaching can help you to start taking meaningful action in your life today. Visit my site, ellenwyomingdeloy.com. See you next time.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Monday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update around this hour. Over on looks like 518 where it meets up with the 405 and the I-5 interchange. Those leaving SeaTac, small topical issue and hesitation down through to the I-5. Brakes free, but then slows up again around the 167 interchange as you approach into the S-curve. Good thing though, move through the S-curves in both directions. 405 northbound stop sign. And stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's Dr. Pat Show, Talk Radio to Thrive By. She welcomes back Nancy Landrum. And they'll chat about me, a two-year-old. Stay tuned. Coming up next on the Dr. Pat Show. And
ABC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. A spokesman for the Taliban is issuing a warning when it comes to the U.S. withdrawing troops from Afghanistan. Sahel Shaheen told Sky News extending the deadline beyond August 31st would create mistrust between the terrorist group and the U.S. Biden has said getting more people out of Afghanistan may lead to the deadline being pushed back. The Taliban is now in control of the war-torn country. President Biden is going to meet with other G7 leaders to discuss the evacuation of U.S. armed forces and civilians from Afghanistan. Tomorrow's virtual meeting will include leaders of the U.K., Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan. The meeting comes after the president of France reportedly told Biden NATO has a moral responsibility to help Afghan allies leave the country. Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine is getting full approval from the FDA, the first COVID vaccine to be approved by regulators. The shots have been given to millions of Americans under emergency use authorization since last December. Dr. Jay Wolfson with the University of South Florida College of Public Health says the move could encourage people who feel COVID vaccines are experimental.
It'll also be easier for some employers to say, I want all of my employees to take this. It may also be easier for some states to mandate the vaccine for everybody, for kids in particular.
But Wolfson says a vaccine mandate is unlikely, seeing as the flu shot isn't even mandated. Beyonce and Jay-Z are the new faces of Tiffany's latest luxury diamond ad campaign. The global jewelry brand tapped the powerhouse couple to collaborate in their new About Love campaign. The first ad features Beyonce sporting a priceless 128-carat diamond pendant alongside her tuxedoed husband. Tiffany says the couple epitomizes modern love, adding the pair perfectly represents the brand's values of love, strength, and self-expression. The ad campaign launches September 2nd and will also feature an accompanying film from the stars. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
For 35 years, Donny Coe Pet Clinic has provided comprehensive care for the animals of people in need. Funded by donations and powered by volunteers, Donny Coe Pet Clinic keeps overhead to a minimum to ensure healing is at a maximum. Please join Team Donny Coe and make a difference in the lives of people and their animals. Volunteer or donate today. Donny Coe Pet Clinic. Log into donnycoe.org. That's D-O-N-E.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at alternative talk weather outlook for Monday. Mostly sunny skies, cooler temperatures though. High temperatures around 69, 70 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear skies, low temperatures dropping down to a crisp 53. For Tuesday and for Wednesday, a hair warmer. High temperatures in the low 70s, mostly sunny skies, partly cloudy skies through the overnight. Low temperatures in the mid-50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. I'm live. Welcome, everybody. He's like, you're live. I love that. Welcome, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the show. What a great show we have for you today. Nancy Landrum is in the house. Me? A two-year-old? Nah, can't be me. That's what today's show is about. You know, let me just say a little bit about Nancy because,
you know, we think about where we are now and we think about the changes we've gone through and you think about how you fared through them. You know, one has to be looking at, and I know I've looked at it for myself, you know, when you are in close quarters with people, when you are in uncertainty, when you are fill in the blank for yourselves, it doesn't matter, you fill in the blank. I mean, honestly, I just went through this in my dentist's office, right? So when you are dot, 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 what happens to us now in the middle of stress, in the middle of strain? And, you know, once upon a time, we were in the stress and strain of our lives. No kidding. You went up, you got to your job, you went to work. Maybe your boss is just, like, had a bad hair day. You don't know. But this is different. And so the toll it is taking on us, our relationships, whether they're in the workplace, I mean, honestly, I had a little temper tantrum with my robot yesterday. So that's how I know that there's something that's operating right beyond what we can imagine. Nancy Landrum is that expert. She is that person that has been able to look at the dynamics of relationships. And if you saw some of the tools she uses to help people and help couples, I don't know when she's going to start talking about some of the games she has, but I will tell you, powerful is an understatement. And not only for relationships, I talked with her earlier about taking this body of work into organizations because, OMG, it is so easy to lose your junk. So today, we are taking it on. Go to nancylandrum.com. Managing the two-year-old within Nancy. Wow, right?
Well,
right?
Two-year-olds have a lot of adorable qualities. You know, they're energetic, they're creative, they're curious, they're very loving, affectionate when given the opportunity. But we all know what happens when a two-year-old doesn't get what he or she wants. You know, they're famous for the terrible twos because they throw tantrums. And each of us has a two-year-old within, myself included. I'm not excluding myself. And I love the part of myself that is creative and that, you know, is energetic and gets projects done and loves tackling something new, learning something new. But I, like everyone else, am challenged when I don't get what I want. Or when someone treats me in a way that I consider disrespectful. Now, years ago, when my late husband and I were in the worst of our marriage, we were two 2-year-olds trying to conduct an adult relationship, and we didn't do it very well. We had temper tantrums, each of us. And one of the things, well, our temper tantrums drove us to the brink of separation, until we finally found the help that we needed to learn how to manage out-of-control emotions. So it's fine to throw a temper tantrum, but not when it's attacking another person. So the skill for me was learning to throw my temper tantrum privately, away from where it could hurt anyone, including myself. So I would throw my temper tantrum in my journal. I would write all kinds of nasty things about Jim and how I felt and how wrong he was and why couldn't he listen to me and on until I finally calmed down. And then I could go back to Jim and conduct whatever conversation we were having with respect. That's the key. You know, so I tell my clients, going through a coaching package with me is like taking a master's degree in emotional management. If you want a successful, healthy marriage or any relationship, you must learn to control emotions that are typical of a two-year-old.
I love this conversation because, you know, what you said is important in several ways, right? And one of them is there's a way that you can self-express your tantrum. Now, I will tell you, I had a moment yesterday with my robot, and it wasn't about my robot. You know, we all get into, sometimes what happens is, you know, we do our best to show up in the world, but sometimes we all have off days. You know, we're not perfect. And, you know, I was not having an off day, but I had an off practice day. And it didn't matter what I did. This is the darndest thing, but it's so metaphoric for what you're saying. It didn't matter what I did. I could not get this arm to go from here to here. I don't care what I did. Now, if that happens in a simple mode like that, what the heck goes on in our lives when we can't get ourselves from here to here without a moment?
Or when we can't get someone else from here to there.
Oh, my gosh. I know.
That's usually when the two-year-old comes out in force, when someone else isn't behaving the way I want them to.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's we got real creative. I used to throw my temper tantrums in my journal, or with one particular relationship I was having trouble with, I wrote a nasty letter every morning to that person and then burned it until finally the anger and frustration that I had with that person had dissipated enough that I could begin to see the issue from their point of view, which is called empathy. Jim got real creative. He didn't like journaling, and so he bought a microcassette recorder, and today we have them on our phones. But when he was angry with me and wanted to tell me off, he would take a time out, go drive to the nearby park and park where someone no one could hear him, and he would turn the cassette recorder on and bawl me out good. You know, just say whatever he wanted to say to me, but he said it into the microcassette recorder. And he said he would rewind it and play it back, and when it started to sound funny to him, he knew he was ready to come home and deal with the issue with me, but with respect.
I think that what that does is threefold. Can we talk about what that does for a minute?
Sure.
You know, because I think there is emotion at this, that if folks can understand the power of that, there's something in it that's so important. See, what he did is whatever he needed to do, he released the energy of that.
Yes.
He released it. You know, what I'm hearing from people that it's really interesting, a lot of folks have been pent up for about 20 months, you know, without any tools, without any release. So when they do release, it's like a big explosion.
Yes.
Right? So he took himself off, and you wrote a letter, right? We all have these moments where we get to go rant and rave for a little bit. But the key, isn't it, that two-year-old within, we have to find a place for that two-year-old within to fully express and not harm another person.
Exactly. Exactly. Which means that I have to anticipate. I have to learn to gauge when I'm being triggered and when my emotions are reaching a point where I know I'm going to lose it and not be able to be respectful, and make an adult choice to get the two-year-old away. I coached one mom years ago who tended to be very reactive and too violent with her children. And she taught her children that when she needed a timeout, she'd go to her bedroom, pound on a pillow, tell them, please don't open the door. Mom needs a timeout. And she would vent her anger out of, you know, beating on the mattress. In fact, some of the research indicates that it's easiest to dissipate the energy of anger by using our arms, something to do with our arms, which is why women traditionally clean the stove or mop the floor, and men can wash the car or get on a boxing bag or play basketball. Something that uses the upper body tends to dissipate the energy of anger out of our body faster, I'm told. That's what research has said.
Exactly. And there's a reason for it, though, too, right? When we're looking at this, there's a reason for how that works. But isn't the point in what we're talking about really to demonstrate it's an alternative? Because once we let that two-year-old out of its crib or wherever it's in, and there are no boundaries and there are no considerations for other people, the havoc that it could really raise is so damageable that you may not be able to pair. I think, Nancy, the reason we're talking about this is, I mean, if you really are a two-year-old and you're running around in your diapers or whatever you're doing, we know you're a two-year-old. But when you're an adult and your two-year-old show up, sometimes the damage can be so hard to repair, right?
Well, that's why couples come to me for coaching, is because they're acting like two-year-olds and they need to learn how to conduct an adult relationship.
Yeah.
From the adult inside, not from the two-year-old that's out of control. You know, and you don't want to kill the two-year-old. It's not like you want to get rid of it, because anger is a valuable emotion. And creativity and joy and affection and all those things also come from the two-year-old. But when the two-year-old is allowed to react without any control, you know, once in a while you see in public a two-year-old throwing a tantrum. And if it's a wise parent, the wise parent just picks them up, holds them where they can't hurt themselves or anyone else, and waits for the storm to pass. And once the storm has passed, then maybe they can reason with the two-year-old. But I remember my niece telling me that her grandson was throwing a temper tantrum, who was about two, because he wanted to play with her guitar picks, and she took them away from him, and he threw a tantrum. And she just held him and kept saying, "I'm sorry, Grandma can't let you play with everything." You know, they were small enough he could have swallowed them. She didn't want them to get lost. She just kept saying, "I'm sorry, I can't let you play with everything." So when I was in danger of losing my temper, I literally had to clamp my jaw shut, because mine came out mostly in vicious words. Clamp my jaw shut and say to my two-year-old inside, "If I let you say what you're about to say, you're going to have to apologize later. Do you want to apologize?" My two-year-old hates apologizing. And so she would say, "No, I don't want to apologize." "Then let me take you away. Let me call a timeout so that you can vent your anger in a safe place, not at gym or not at one of the children, not attacking anyone else. Because if I let you have your way right now with your anger, you're going to do damage that will need repair. And repairing is not much fun. It's better to take a time out and let my two-year-old throw a tantrum in a quiet place away."
Yeah. I want to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to break this down a little bit. Because one of the things we know, and this is what we're discovering, this is one of the saddest bits of information in my field of psychology. I touched upon this in my research, but I did not know how extensive this was. And we'll talk about this when we come back from break. You know, what I discovered is that people that I interviewed were carrying things for 10 years.
Yeah.
Now, why would you carry something for 10 years? Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about how important it is for us now as parents, grandparents, whether you're locked down or not locked down, whatever the relationship you're in, there's a level of mindfulness you need to have, because what we're finding out, when a young two-year-old or a child has been abused, and I'm not talking just sexually. Sexually is horrific, but we'll get into that. But I'm talking verbally abused, physically abused. And it doesn't matter what kind, folks, right? It doesn't matter what kind. When that happens, tell me what the impact is when we come back. Let's take a short break.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about maximum medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Join the New Earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each month as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia Stephanie is a spiritual teacher, passionate speaker, published author, and founder of the Empower Network. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Jennifer Noel Taylor on the hit show Quantum Touch Radio, supercharging your life on TransformationTalkRadio.com. She'll take a quantum journey as well as reveal powerful yet simple steps to create more abundance, better health, emotional and mental vibrancy, and happier relationships using universal quantum touch principles. For more information, visit QuantumTouch.com. Did you know that each Enneagram type has a different worldview, different patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaving? They also have essential qualities that are unique to their type. Understanding this helps us develop more tolerance, respect, and appreciation for ourselves and others. Renee Siegel works with individuals, couples, families, and groups using the Enneagram to build better relationships as a tool in addiction recovery. Visit YouArePurePotential.com for more info.
It's time to shake out your money-making truth on Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom, creating wealth from spiritual health on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show is more than your roadmap to success. It's your compass to abundance, your joy, and ease. Jennifer Bloom teaches you about the soul's relationship to money and wealth and how improving that relationship serves both you and the world. Learn more at JenniferBloom.com.
Yeah, how many two-year-olds out there, how many of you have just been right in the middle of a marriage breakup or relationship breakup or any kind of breakup or friendship breakup or family breakup? I mean, yeah, when do the two-year-olds really come out? Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays, that's when the two-year-olds, they're like all dressed and ready to go. But today we're talking with Nancy Landrum because this is a body of work that she does as a coach, relationship coach and beyond, to help people understand not just the healthy boundaries, but what to do. And what I love about Nancy's work is she's never telling you to suck it up. And that's really why couples work with her, because there are results that you get that will help you if, in fact, this is where you want to go. And if that's not where you want to go, even though breaking up is hard to do, there's a way to do it. Nancy, what's the best place? NancyLandrum.com, right? Your website for folks?
Yes.
We're talking about the two-year-old today. Let's talk about, we know how the two-year-old may show up in relationships. Let's just talk about what that looks like. But also, what if, like I said before the break, two-year-old has grown up in a maybe horrific situation? And when I say that, many people want to dismiss verbal abuse, and I don't. But what happens now if that two-year-old shows up?
All of us bring our wounds with us into any relationship. And the more intimate the relationship, the more important it is to us, the more our wounds show up. It's like a bruised place. When the bruise hasn't healed and you touch it, it still hurts. And if you haven't healed from wounds in the past, or you haven't known how to deal with the wounds from the past, then you're kind of doomed to recreate them in your current relationship. I have a current client who was severely abused in a past relationship, and she and her current partner are trying to create a healthy relationship now, but little things will happen that trigger the trauma and the panic from this past wound. In fact, I was communicating with her this morning to give her some ideas about how to take care of herself when she feels a panic attack coming on. Even though the current relationship isn't mistreating her the way the previous relationship did, she still gets that panic attack reaction whenever there's anything that even remotely reminds her of discord, of conflict, of not being treated exactly the way she wants. So if the 2-year-old inside of you suffered abuse, either verbal, physical, sexual, doesn't matter what kind of abuse it is. In fact, there's 4 different kinds of abuse that can happen in adult relationships. That if you suffered verbal abuse and the 2-year-old will react in 2 ways, will either fight back and get really tough and determined to not let it get her down or him down, or will push through it and might become very aggressive in adult life, might become very controlling in adult relationships as a way of protecting herself from having that kind of abuse take place again. Or the 2-year-old will become very submissive in an attempt to keep herself safe. And in that case, the 2-year-old becomes a professional victim. In any relationship, they see themselves as the victim. And they only react as a victim. They're not able to set appropriate boundaries for themselves. They tend to choose partners over and over again that recreate that kind of abuse. So they're a victim at work. They're a victim in their marriage. They're a victim as a parent. They're a victim as a friend. To learn how to outgrow the need to wear the victim role in any relationship takes some real hard work and takes some time.
When I think about this, I'm really drawn to getting back to what you said before. One of the hardest things, Nancy, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, and that's why I think many of us who've really had to work on our lives and ourselves, what we have found is it is close to impossible to do alone. At least I have found that. Now, I'm very fortunate that I've had great people in my life. I have a best friend I've had since 1972. And, you know, we are very different people. We are so very, very different. I want to put a weeping Scotch pine in the front of the lawn. And, you know, my best friend's like, ugh. No way. You know, we're very different in that way, but we know each other. And so there's been a reflection of that. How can people use that reflection to change? Because 9 times out of 10, you know something's off. I mean, you know something. You can feel it in your energy field. You know you're off. But you don't know how to even hit the pause button. You know, you're not quite sure. God, I am feeling like a victim, but you don't use those words, Nancy. You just feel like, why is everybody ganging up on me? Hello? Now, if you're metaphysical, you're like, why is the universe ganging up on me? I'm going to take that back, universe, because I don't actually believe that about me. But isn't that part of the sense of things?
You know, last summer, I ended up writing a book. I thought I was through writing books, but I ended up writing a book for my clients called Your Inner Child, A Journey to Peace and Wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
freedom. And it was because I ended up doing inner child work with so many of my clients that were playing the victim role or were out of control with their reactions toward other people, inappropriate actions. And the first coach I had, I was in my early 40s, and I was desperately depressed. I felt like a victim. My life was out of control. My marriage, my kids were out of control. And she began to teach me about how to work with that wounded inner child, going back to childhood when I was so wounded by the fighting that went on between my mom and dad. The fighting wasn't targeting me necessarily, although I got my share of it, but I was so disturbed by the way they treated each other. And she began to teach me how to develop a loving parent inside myself to take care of this wounded inner child.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what a loving parent would do. I had been raised by a nurturing, loving parent. I didn't, you know, my loving parent was the perfectionist, the demanding one, the judgmental one, that seemed like the one that had the most authority and the most control inside of me. But she taught me that isn't the loving parent. The loving parent loves you at all times. The loving parent loves you no matter what you do. The loving parent will step in and take control when you're about to hurt yourself or hurt someone else. And it took some years. That's where I began journaling. Is I would write out my feelings from usually that two-year-old inside that was wounded and hurting. And then I would practice being the loving parent, loving that two-year-old within that was wounded. And that was my journey toward wholeness, was learning how to work with the wounded inner child and not let that wounded two-year-old become the abuser. I had become the abuser in my verbal disrespect for my husband and sometimes with my children. And I had to learn how to stop the two-year-old from repeating the behavior that she hated so much as a child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, the loving parent was not an easy role for me to learn because I hadn't had a model at an early age. So Jackie became my model for quite a while. She would read my journal and tell me, you know, this isn't what I mean by a loving parent. And this is how the loving parent speaks to a beloved child. And I'm starting, you know, I'm finding one of my current clients is needing that same kind of modeling right now because she doesn't know how. She doesn't know how to love herself. Loving myself was one of the toughest, I guess, toughest jobs, if you want to call it a job, that I've ever had to do, is to love myself, forgive myself where I'm weak, forgive myself when I make a mistake, go on loving myself, believing in myself. That's been a big challenge for me.
Yeah. What you shared is so critical to people listening today for a lot of reasons, and let me tell you why. What I shared with you during the break is what we're discovering, Nancy, is so many people are exactly in the mode you're in. There's so many people that have been raised and have grown up in a certain way. And the world we live in today, it just doesn't work for, or it just doesn't fit. And, you know, what I hear you saying is by acknowledging this in your own journey, now you can help other people because now you see it coming. When people don't see it coming, right?
Right.
And isn't that sort of the first step? Because if we're not really, you know, we just go on in our lives. We don't see it sometimes. We especially don't see it if this is a pattern in the way we've been operating. You know, it's so funny you mentioned that because I got that from Linda's parents. You know, I met them at a formidable age in my life. But I didn't come from that place. You know, I didn't come from that kind of family.
You mean a loving family?
My birth mom was extremely loving, but she died early on. I came from a disciplinary family.
Yes.
And a stepmom who said, you know, I love you, but I can't really love you like I love my own. But that is a true statement. In the end, when she passed, you could see that changed. But if you don't have it, where do you go? Right? Let's take a short break when we come back. The magic of humanity, you know, this is what Nancy does. When we come back, how do we honor and respect these people that have taught us love and generosity and gratitude, even if our first meeting with them might have been a little bumpy? When we come back, we're going to talk about RESPECT, respect. Not only has Nancy found something interesting about that, but every body of research, and the body of research I did in 2001, this is something that is so at the top of the food chain, we just don't know how to do it. Aretha Franklin said it best, Benny. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Even though your home base is one Enneagram type, you have characteristics of all the types. Tune in to Enneagram Conversations with Renee Siegel the second and fourth Monday of each month at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn how you can unlock your unlimited potential. Visit YouArePurePotential.com for more about Renee and her work. That's the letter U, the letter R, PurePotential.com.
Hey there, I'm Ricky Schwartz from My Turn Life Coaching, Reclaim Your Life. How do you know if you're living your life and not someone else's? Here's one way to find out. First, list out your top five core values. For example, mine are empathy, excellence, passion, service, and core values. Then put those core values into short first-person core value statements. In my case, one, empathy powers my relationships. Two, excellence is the goal in all things I do. Three, passion fuels my perseverance. Four, my value is measured by my service to others. And five, core values drive all of my life decisions. Now ask yourself, am I using my core value statements to drive my personal and professional decisions? Maybe not. Maybe you've never even considered doing so. And that's where life coaching begins. Go to MyTurnLifeCoaching.com and let's put your personal core values into your driver's seat.
Caring for someone with a life-altering diagnosis? You are a care hero. Navigating the unfamiliar options can be overwhelming, but you are not alone. Tune in to A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Lau, twice monthly on Transformation Talk Radio. Let me guide you through your care hero journey by providing actionable information on how to care for a loved one in need. For more information about me, visit TrishLaub.com. That's Trish Laub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com.
Learn how to lead a happier life on Miles to Go with Brittany Miles. How to lose to gain it all. Join Brittany every second and fourth Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Listen as coach and healer Brittany Miles shares stories that teach you about surrender. For more information about Brittany, MilesToGoCoaching.com.
Are you ready to shift your life into overdrive and stop wasting your time? If so, then I want to invite you right now to the Body Regeneration Online Academy with me, Tracy L. In a world filled with so much information, you can get overloaded and confused, left feeling like you've tried everything and still no results. If this is you, then this platform is for you. Help you step into your power, your intuition, and gain clarity. You will learn simple tools that you can use as you walk down the street. I will teach you how to grow a stronger connection to the God consciousness. Imagine imagine having me as your coach, shifting you, uplifting you, empowering you every week, and most of all, helping you stay connected so you can navigate your life journey with ease and grace. Nothing will be able to get in your way, but you will have a community filled with souls just like you to pick you up when you fall down and support you on your wins. No one can go this journey alone. If you are ready for your live activation, check me out at TracyLClark.com and join the TLC Body Regeneration Online Academy now.
Yeah, nobody knows it better than her. Nobody in the world. Back in the day, Benny, when Aretha was out there, Ms. Aretha was out there, demanded a lot of the respect. And boy, it's beautifully done in the movie. When that thing hits everybody, you'll get a lesson in what respect is. Today, we're talking about respect as the foundation of lasting love. And why this is so important is to ask yourself, does the two-year-old within you know what respect is? I don't know. Nancy, we're going to talk about this for a minute, but for those of you out there, please visit nancylandrum.com, please. This is the time where the statistics, the numbers are coming in. We know you've been on stress. We know you've been under strain. This is the time where you don't take this journey alone. And it doesn't matter if you're in relationship with someone, a partner otherwise, or you're struggling in a work environment. I'm finding work environment relationships now are just really, really difficult for people. It's to the point where now in the Washington state, you know, with us having a mandate, I had to walk into the room today and say to everybody, look, I got to give you masks so that when you walk down the hall to go to the restroom, boom, like that. These are the kinds of tensions we're having. But for somebody like me, I'd rather wear my mask and shut down and not go out of any business. But how do you handle them? How do you do this in relationship? What is and why is respect the foundation of lasting love? This is really an unusual thing to talk about today when we're talking about two-year-olds. Can a two-year-old learn respect, Nancy?
Absolutely. If a two-year-old has a loving parent that will stop that two-year-old from getting out of control, or at least getting out of control in a safe environment rather than out of control by attacking someone else. I am preparing this topic today. I thought I was harping on something that I seem to cover almost every interview, but it's so core, it's so central to creating and enjoying healthy, loving relationships. It has to have a foundation of respect. I use an illustration with my clients where I draw two circles, and one represents me and one represents you, but in the middle there's this loving there's this separate entity, a third entity called our relationship. And we both contribute to the relationship. And depending on what we contribute, that relationship is either solid and safe, a safe harbor for both of us, or it is fractured and broken and vulnerable to a lot of different things, vulnerable to abuse, vulnerable to infidelity. We talked about infidelity last month, and it's the cracks in the relationship that are not being, the relationship isn't held together with solid boundaries. So the cracks in the boundaries of the relationship leave it vulnerable to things that will damage the relationship or will damage those around you.
I want to talk about the cracks. And the reason I want to talk about the cracks for a minute is that I think we all have cracks. And I have learned so much from my cracks. So I want to give you a little example. I want you to compliment. I want you to comment on it, because this is a woman that without her,
I wouldn't have learned. I learned a lot about respect from my stepmom, and I learned it in a very interesting way. But for me, I was that kid that just didn't feel great about herself. It didn't matter. I mean, you wouldn't know that now, but that's my Achilles heel, you know. And when I met Joan, Linda's mom, I must have been 22, 23, something like that. And I never walked with my head up. I mean, honestly, this was me. Can you see me on the camera? I don't know if you can see me.
I can see you.
That is a sign. Now, people that see that sign and know that sign understand it. And I walked into Joan's house and was introduced to her, Linda's mom, and everybody called her Joan. Uh-huh. And you walk in and you get introduced and you're like this. Joan said to me, let me tell you something right now. You come in my house, you got to do one thing. You need to lift up your head and look me in the eye. That was the last time I walked with my head down.
Oh, bless her heart. Oh, bless her. And bless you for hearing it, for hearing the message.
Oh, my God. You look into those piercing blue eyes and the fire of that Irish woman, I'm telling you. That was, but she did it in a way where this was about love. And she said, you know, she says, I want to see you. I want to meet you. I don't want to look at the top of your head. And then we went on.
Yeah. I said exactly the same thing to a male client of mine recently who spoke very low. It was hard to hear him, and his head was always down. He was kind of looking up through his forehead. And I said, that has to change.
Yeah.
You're presenting a victim to the world.
Yeah.
And that isn't who you want to be. I know you. That isn't who you want to be.
Yeah.
People deserve to look you right in the eye,
mm-hmm.
to see who you are and present yourself with more confidence. Now, I understand lack of confidence. It's been a lifelong battle for me to build self-confidence and belief in myself. I still have to work at it. It's not an easy thing for me. But looking someone in the eye when you meet them and, you know, saying hello, how are you, or shaking their hand when we're allowed to touch hands, all of that is saying to the world, I'm open to be known and I want to know you. And it's just like the basis of respect that has to go into a marriage relationship daily, moment by moment, day by day.
Yeah. Yep. And I want to just say to everybody, go to Nancy's website, nancylandrum.com, and you're going to see all the books we've talked about, everything from How to Stay Married and Love It, you know, to really looking at, you know, this idea of your inner child, the path to healing and freedom. But, you know, you also were talking about something else, and let's talk about disrespect for a minute.
Yes.
Because I think part of that with Joan was a symbol of disrespect, like in some way, right? Like
yes.
a symbol of disrespect. Now, that I wasn't disrespecting her, but from her perspective, I want to talk with you about how disrespect shows up. And people may not even know it, right? You know, because love without this level of respect is not going to last.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may get through those early years because your drive is sexual, but once that dies off a little bit, not saying it does for everybody, but I'm just saying there's another level you go to. Disrespect is cumulative. Sorry, it is.
It is.
Can you talk about some of the ways disrespect shows up, especially when you're looking at the circles, right? You know, let's talk about a couple of ways it shows up.
If you go to my website, there's a free download on the homepage that lists 42 common methods of communicating that are disrespectful. And almost everyone in our culture uses at least a few of them. Some of them are more damaging than others, like being unfaithful is enormously disrespectful to your partner and to the relationship. But if you constantly interrupt your partner and don't let them finish what they're saying, it's like Chinese water torture. You know, one drip at a time constantly adds up to a feeling of being disrespected. So what it looks like, my favorite was sarcastic put-downs. I'm really good with words. I was good at sarcastic put-downs. So I would throw those at Jim when I thought I wasn't being heard or he didn't pay attention to me. Or if he didn't hear me when I said something quietly, I would say it louder. So eventually I became a yeller. His disrespect was running from conflict rather than addressing conflict. So he would try to, you know, he'd leave home for a few hours and think he would come home to a quiet wife. Well, when he left, I just got more angry than ever because, to me, I interpreted that as abandonment. Like, stay here and work with me. Don't just bail out on me. One woman that I was actually talking to this morning, her husband just goes silent and won't communicate at all. That is disrespect.
Yeah.
So there's many different ways. I think one of the most common ways in our culture is kind of a one-upsmanship. You tell me something, I'll tell you something.
Oh,
better.
Yeah, that one.
That one is disrespectful.
And that's the one nobody knows is disrespectful, by the way.
It is disrespectful. Also, when I give you advice and I don't have your permission to give you advice, that is disrespect. It's saying, basically, it's communicating the message, you're not smart enough to figure this out by yourself. You need my help. Let me help you. Let me give you some advice. That is disrespectful. Some of the most common ones. One of the common ones in our culture is the finger pointing you. You did this. You did that. It's so attacking. And you're going to get defensiveness. You'll get denial. You'll get counterattack when you go at someone with you messages. So ways of turning those disrespectful methods into more respect might be choosing to adopt better anger management skills, which is one of the modules in the coaching package that I work with people is around anger management, learning to vent safely away so that you're not attacking someone.
Yeah.
Being respectful might mean learning to move into conflict rather than turning away from it. When Jim and I read in Harville Hendrick's book, Getting the Love You Want, we read that conflict is the doorway to greater intimacy.
Yeah.
Jim could not believe that. Conflict just seemed like a horrible thing he wanted to avoid. But what we learned was when we had the skills to deal with conflict in a respectful way, rather than attacking each other, then conflict, the resolving of that conflict led us into greater emotional intimacy. And he eventually got over his fear of conflict. He didn't need to be afraid of it anymore because conflict was not delivered with disrespect. So one of the primary skills I teach couples, and we've talked about this before, Dr. Pat, is the skill of a skilled discussion, which has rules. It has very strong boundaries. But the purpose of the boundaries is to keep both of us in respect. While we are taking turns talking about a particular issue or a decision we need to make, one of the hardest parts of the skilled discussion is for one partner to be willing to listen to their other partner, to their partner, until a partner is completed what they have to say, and then they switch roles and the listener becomes the speaker. But that taking turns is the hard, talk about a two-year-old in a conversation. Two-year-olds don't like to take turns. You know, they want to be first in line all the time. Well, a two-year-old in a conversation, particularly about a conflict, wants to be heard rather than wanting to hear what the other person has to say. So setting that aside, setting the two-year-old aside long enough to have a skilled discussion is the biggest challenge. It was the biggest challenge for me, and it's certainly the biggest challenge for most of my clients.
And, you know, that leads to really understanding how this all works. Because let's go to, you know, why it's so hard to change these.
But it's not impossible. See, I think that's the thing. You know, if you're aware of it, but also, you know, the Hendrix work, I mean, the whole container thing, because I took that too, and I actually went for a number of years to Imago therapy.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, when you're in a relationship and you realize that, you know, even with that, it's not going to sustain the relationship, one of the great things you find out is that. But the question always comes, Nancy, and we've got a few minutes left. Let's get on it. People don't think they can change. How often have you heard, wait a minute, this is just who I am? Well, no, yeah, you can change your behavior. Everybody says we can change our brain waves. But when that shows up in a relationship, there's nowhere to go.
Well, I've had clients complain, you're trying to turn me into someone I'm not.
That's it.
I said, what I am trying to do is help you be your best self, not your mediocre or poor self. When you're using disrespectful methods of communicating, you are your poor self. So by learning different skills and being willing to use them, I'm helping you become the best of who you are. And I teach a lot about the brain. Our brains love habits. Our brains love habits. And so whatever method, whatever way you've been communicating or practicing your relationship, well, by the time they come to me, I said, your habits got you where you are now. If you want a better relationship, you need to change your habits. And the brain doesn't want to change habits. The brain likes being stuck in a particular groove, doing the same thing over and over again. And when wanting a different result, they don't want to, most of us, and I myself included, I don't like having to change myself. I want the other person to change. And so some people come to me expecting me to change their partner. And when I make it clear that both people have to change, they sometimes get upset about that. But you have to practice a new behavior long enough for it to create a new path in the brain. Literally, something I read years ago was that the blood supply goes to the neurons that are being fired often. So in my case, the sarcastic put downs in the ass were habits that I'd been practicing for years before we finally found a coach that helped us. And it was literally having to abandon a well-worn path in the brain and create a new path as though I was walking through virgin forest, having to cut away the brambles and the stickers and, you know, find my way through a new place in my brain. But when I practice the new habit enough times, the blood supply literally abandons the old habit and comes to support the new one. That's why new habits are so hard to create, and old habits are hard to let go of. It's not that you're a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
It's that the brain is wired to support habitual behavior.
But you know how powerful this is? And I want to make sure everybody goes to nancylantern.com for help. In relationships, we don't think about it. But I'll tell you what. There isn't a sports person out there. I don't care if you're Russell Wilson or you're somebody else that hasn't gone to some coach that says you need to step back 2 inches. Because if you don't step back 2 inches, you're not going to do it. I mean, as much as we think we cannot change, right? I have seen it over and over. Yeah, is it easier to learn it from the get-go and come out of the womb like that? It is. But think about what you're doing to help people in relationship. And anytime anybody says that, I think about the many people that we look at now that are their celebrity status, Tom Cruise overcoming what he went through. These folks, we are capable.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're helping us with.
Absolutely.
We're capable.